Chadwick, Real 23. We were talking about your time. At the moment, we're on with the Mortar Platoon of the Support Company of 1st Battalion DLI in the front line in Korea. And you mentioned that you could get away sometimes even to the bath area, to, you know, the mobile bath houses. What was a trip to them like?
Brilliant. Because in most later, that stage, they were manned by Americans. And the procedure was, you could go in there, strip off, have your shower, and then, while you were still naked, you go to the American guy that was there, giving your underpants, vest, and shirt, and he would give you a new set. But it was better to kick than ours. It was a beautiful shirt, beautiful underpants, beautiful vest, and beautiful socks. So what I used to do, I used to go around and catch three or four shirts and have three or four baths at different mobile units and get three or four clean sets of clothing. So with the mortars, you could change your clothes. Different again later in a rifle company.
What about the latrines? What were they like?
You made your own. You made your own latrines, obviously. We used to have desert roses in the trenches. And a desert rose comprised of a hole with some stones thrown in and a spent shell case as a pier form. And if any visitor officers were coming, you would sprinkle some foot powder around it to make it look hygienic. Didn't do any good, but it looked good. But these were desert roses, so that men weren't urinating in trenches and all over the place, especially in the warm weather for disease and what have you, flies congregating.
And what pattern of latrine itself would you dig? I mean, how did you go about it? Or was it just a hole in the ground?
Oh, just a hole in the ground. With 2-4 rests either side and a tree trunk laid across on a piece of timber. And that was it. There were no seats on it or which toilet style.
And what about the nature of the fighting? I mean, you were in the thing. How much in the summer before you moved to that, how much artillery or mortar fire would you get?
Quite a lot, but again, more so in winter for reasons I'll tell you in a minute.
So, when you were with the mortars, not too much.
Not too much at all. Not too much.
Was there much fighting going on over the hill? You know,
90%. Fighting patrol activity.
Which you, as mortars, weren't involved in. Would you sometimes have to respond to requests for help?
Oh, yes. Which was always a worrying task with the complexity of the weapon. Because you hoped that the person who's called it down knew the capabilities of the weapon. Not expected to be so precise and spot on. But the glory of that, the mortars weren't called much for that even, because with being a static line, the American persuader guns, which were about 12 miles behind the line, could be more. They cut it off to such a fine art, they literally could put shells down on the sixpence.
From 12 miles away, they'd be more accurate than you were from a mile.
Oh, absolutely. Fantastic. But they worked the range and line out, and they had the time to do it so efficiently. And the weapons were all new, so there was no tolerance in the barrels. They were firing through. They were brilliant, the American persuaders. They could drop them, as I say, on the time.
So, who was in line alongside you? You were in the Commonwealth Division. Which nation troops were next to you in the line?
The brigade. We were in the Commonwealth Division. We were 139 Brigade of that division. And we were lucky. in as much as we have 1, 2, and 3 RER and 1 DLI in a brigade.
RAR is
an Australian regiment. Now, with having 3 battalions of RAR, 3 battalions makes a brigade. We have 1 extra. So it gives us a little bit more rest than having just 3, which is a good thing.
How many battalions would be in the line at the time? Was it like, would there be 2 forward and 2?
2 up. 1 out on reserve, 1 might be on road to another brigade, and it's not an idea. But you always have a battalion in reserve.
And what did you think of the Aussies?
Well, they were good. They were good Australian English regiments, broken up by a few Australians. Because 90% were immigrants. And the reason being that when they signed up, these people were told and were granted, if they did a year in Korea and a year in Japan, if they so desired, they got a free passage home. So they joined up in abundance to get back to Blighty. But they used to come in the mess when we were out on rest, talking with all the Aussie dialect. And after about 4 times, they were more broad like than I am, from Burnley. And the RSM was from Blackpool. All this, as I say, there were good English regiments, covered up by a few Australians.
What about the real Australians? I mean, are you just joking when you say they buggered them up? What were the real Australians?
They were hard, man. Mouthy. Typical mouthy. But they were more matured. They were older than our boys. See, we still had the National Service. I'd say 50 or 60% National Service of the rank and file. And they were young boys. The Australians were more matured for us. 20 odd, 26, 27.
Had some of them served in the Second World War then?
Not of them. Majors were privates in that army. But the majors in the First World War were the M6, eh?
In the Second World War?
In the Second World War. And there were private soldiers there. And they weren't bothered getting any higher. They were going to do the 2 year and then get a free passage back to Blighty.
And were they were reasonably efficient in the military sense?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they were good lads. They were good patrolmen. And this was the dodgy work.
Did you have any contact with any other Commonwealth troops in Korea?
Oh.
At that time?
We used a lot. The French, the Belgians, the Turks, the Greeks.
When did it become a problem? Was it the language? Was that right from when did that make itself apparent to you? Early on, or when you were in the infant, when you were back in the rifle platoon?
When I was back.
Right, we'll come on to that then. There's a problem. So, how long would you be in the line at a go? And where would you go during the 10 days out?
Back to a rest area, Camp Casey, or reservoir area, as they called it. Places well back where you're away from shelling and everything.
And what was it like there?
First of all, trying to get the sleep beat pattern back into focus. In the warm weather, better, because you didn't mind so much. But in the cold weather, you didn't feel like just having a smooth line. There were no sunbathing, for instance. We did PT, weapon cleaning, checking of stores, maintenance of stores, all the things you couldn't do in the line. And you were literally, from the minute you came out, preparing to go back in, getting all your stores and everything put into ship shape.
How are people standing up to the active service?
Pretty good. Very good. Very good. And the National Service lads were brilliant. Really
Were they better than the regulars?
Yes.
In what way?
Better time for that.
In what way?
In every way. Educational way. Attitude of mind. The whole being. The National Service was far superior to the average regular. There were some cracking regular soldiers. But by and large, the better type of man was the National Service.
Weren't there any National Service who just didn't want to be there?
Dozens of them. But it didn't affect them doing the job. And I think there were, especially when I've spoken to them since, they were all, by now, said they were always glad they went there. Once they'd done it, sadly, it gave them that satisfaction.
So, what recreational facilities were there? At Camp Casey, say, or the Reservoir.
Camp Casey, took a war competitions, intercompany football, intercompany basketball, the odd little cross-country run, company level. Plenty to keep you occupied if you wanted to do it.
Any contact with the local Koreans?
They were away from the zones. There was near Camp Casey, there was an area over Chicago where it was strictly out of bounds.
Why?
Well, for obvious reasons.
Brothels.
Well, the lads used to make their way down there at night, make no bother about that. And if they were sensible, the military police from the big blue. Talking about military police, the worst military police I've ever met in the service, either before, up to, and after then, were the Canadians. They were vicious.
Can you give us an example or two? Or did they ever mistreat you? Or
they never got the chance to mistreat me. They tried it once.
What happened?
Well, we were coming back from around Sammy. Picked up about 3 o'clock in the morning, about 6 of us, and there was 2 of them. So they come, what they used to term out there, putting the muscle on. So, you know, we politely said, well, if you fancy your chances, you take any of us on the salary. Well, they would get us court martial, they would get us this, we would get us that. So we just walked away and they followed us back to camp, back to our base, didn't matter. Got to the camp and said, right, who do you want to see? They answered, well, I mean, they were barking up the wrong tree. And I don't know which company commander it were, this particular instance came out. We told them, said, this is what you please. And they were charging us with being out of bounds and camp in old Chicago, which we've been. We have been there. But I mean, God bless us, you know. There's nobody done it. There's nobody drinking. They had a few. And they were sent away with a fleeing the leader. But the other ranks did something a bit more serious and got sent to detention. They said it was the cruelest prison there must have been in the world, and it was manned by Canadians. They traitor. They never went back. They added a horrific name. I can't vouch for it first hand, but the troops told me when they came back, never again, that they had a real bad name for Canadians.
So you'd be 10 days out and then back in for a month. Would it always be to the same place?
Oh no, different places. Sometimes you went back to the same place, but you could move anywhere.
Was it always the Natron area, or...?
Oh no, further along the line. You know, that was an imaginary line drawn from west to east, the 36th parallel, and that's where we manned.
Were you aware of what was going on in Korea? I mean, were you given lectures or, you know, that the history of the conflict explained, or who you were fighting even?
Well, we knew it was the Chinese volunteer army or whatever it were. They came in to help the Koreans. They were the troops you had to worry about, the Chinamen. The Koreans wasn't much help at all.
So any other incidents during this, the first 3 or 4 months, the first 3 or 4 postings before you went to back to Iraq?
Nothing really.
When did the cold weather start?
It starts coming in about November and comes in very fast.
So you'd have a bit of that while you were in the mortars?
Just a little.
How did it change your lives then?
Well, first of all, your clothing. You came out the line and you went back in dressed for the winter, which constituted long johns and woolen vests, string vests. Then you inner parka, pants, inner parka, coat.
What were they?
Pants and a coat, like a combat coat.
Made of what?
Well, like canvas stuff. Then your outer parka, pants and jacket. And all was zipped at the front. Always zipped at the back for obvious reasons. Then you outer parka combat on top of that lot. Your boots were the normal boots with the most marvellous liner in.
Inside the boot?
Inside the boot. And all you did, you were allowed to undo your boot, take your boot off, and just tap the liner until you could see all the perforations again, and then put it back. You used to sweat up, keep your feet lovely and warm. And then we wore wristlets. And it did work as long as that portion of the wrist and hand is kept warm, you've got movement of fingers. Whereas with gloves, you just went numb. You couldn't even handle a weapon with that numb. But as long as from there to there, you have these woolen wristlets.
3 inches either side of the wrist, George.
Side. And you have the movement all the time with your fingers, even in the extreme cold.
And how cold was it?
30 below, 40, 50. And you were up on the hills. Getting the wind, the side of the wind.
There was wind as well.
Oh, vicious. This is where the problem starts. The shelling in the winter was horrific. And the object of the exercise was to blow you off the hill you were on and smash all the trenches. Because no way could you rebuild them.
Because the ground was iron hard.
And that would leave you lying on the surface freezing to death. That was the main reason for all the, and it was expensive shelling.
What was it like being under a bombardment like that for you?
Me personally, I must be a little thick because, you know, I've laid there watching and listening to them and seeing them land. Get the old story, some lads really panicked. They dived into the dugout. They were just advising to get in because they were well insulated with 5 or 6 walls of sandbags on the top, which was pretty good, and they were well dug into the ground. But the trenches would all be knocked in after a very heavy shelling, where you could get away with picks and shovels shifting the debris in the trenches, but you couldn't dig new dugouts. And the idea was to say, well, you'd reverse down to the, you'd move up top of the hill a lot of the lads to the reverse slope to get them out the line of fire. But at the same time, you'd be ready for an attack coming in, so that you'd be ready to run back up. But the whole winter, and they would do occasional shelling for obvious reasons, to keep you awake all night, keep you tired. They might just send the odd one for a general alarm, everybody alerted. And then they might give you a real stomp at 1 o'clock in the morning. That'll keep you up for the rest of the night, pimping. There was a wave coming in to attack. And this is where you got very little sleep. You never took your boots off. You never took your clothes off for the month. Ever. In winter. No chance.
Now, what about your transfer back to... Why were you transferred out back to the infantry? The rifle platoon?
Promotion. You see, I was never a staff sergeant. I went straight from sergeant to company sergeant major. And I was moved into C Company.
So you were company sergeant major of C Company. And you got that December, wasn't it?
December.
1952. Were you pleased at your promotion?
And I wanted to be back with a rifle company.
Why? Because it was more cushy.
That's what I didn't want. I just wanted to come over there and say, I know it sounds stupid, but I want to be with a rifle company where it was happening.
And this was C Company?
C Company.
Who was in charge at that time?
Good question. Alan, we lost Major Sean Kelly. He died of wounds. And then this new major arrived, Major Johnny Tresorna, DSO.
Tresorna.
Johnny Tresorna. And I was sent to be his sergeant major, and I soon realised why. He was a fanatic. He was a brilliant soldier. He's a very well-known man. He's made films. He played rugby for the army, cricket for Glamorgan, a bachelor, total sportsman. He'd been in the chair at the Airborne Forces Depot, training Air Force troops. So I'll give you a brief resume of the type of a man he was. About 5'10", beautifully built. A physical fanatic. Of course, I landed him, and I learned a lot from him. Regrettably, he was killed. And he took over that company, and he directed it to ship. The lads didn't know what it did then. God, it was a bad life.
What did he do?
Well, when he joined us at Christmas, before he went in the line, he was giving them lectures when he played cricket for Glamorgan, how he met Wally Barnes. Imagine Wally Barnes, I was remembering, going on the football field with his laces baptized correctly. He was a perfectionist. And when Sam Bailey was done, it'd be like an English bond wall, all square and neat, and fantastic. As soon as we got into the line, he had signposts made for every trench, Piccadilly Circus, Clapham Junction, Highway, oh God. It was a revelation to me, but it was hard work keeping up with him. But I learned a terrific amount. Shortly afterwards, another major was killed, a very good friend of mine, Major Pat. Major Pat. Thank God.
Yeah, doesn't matter. What was causing the casualties? Was this the artillery?
Sean Kelly was artillery. A little bit of shrapnel went up into somewhere, and they could never got on. Somebody meant air wire down below here. But was in a minefield, a mine panel. And of course, you lay your own mine panels in the forward lines. And somebody somewhere along the line must have put the tapes in the wrong place. And they walked into their own mine panel. That was killed. Ariana lost the leg. There's about six casualties, bad casualties, of that one. And that's when Colonel Peter Jeffries gave the all-important order. No field officer had to leave the FDRs, either for patrol or anything, unless it was a battalion attack. Now that's, we'll come back to that later.
So now you went back as company sergeant major. What would you say your role was as company sergeant major then? What was the difference between your job and your major's job?
One of my main roles was to maintain morale with the troops and all sergeants minor.
Now how did, well, let's take them one by one. How did you set about that?
Well, they all knew me. I was pretty well known. A friendly attitude as opposed to this foreign peacetime screaming and shouting hot dance. A more familiar approach than what you would have in barracks, and it was never taken advantage of. There's nobody ever shouted Tom or Jack. They'd always shout Sir or whatever, but you'd have a laughing joke with them. At night time, I used to make my way around all the company coaches and pop in and have a big chat, a cigarette with them, ask how things were. And at all times, they were willing to come and see me with any problems they had, domestic wise, whatever.
Did you get much of that?
You got the odd ones that tried to get home, but mum wasn't proud. And the wife was having a baby,
were they genuine or?
They were doctors.
So it didn't matter whether they were genuine or not?
No, they were fucking different. I would take him in front of the commander, but I'd already briefed him, and he sympathised with him and sent him back. The Irish Northerner, John Tresorna was a Cornishman. And he spoke far back. He was a very professional tongue. And I marched this, but this chap came, I forget the name now, he said, I want us to the skipper line. I said, what sort of says? So and so and so. Oh, he said, it's private. I said, it's not private. I said, I'm going to be there, whether you like it or not, if you don't go in. I'll tell you what I do in there. I went in, it was a very good journey. That's the name. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, private here, another, sir. Yes, well, what can I do for you? He said, well, it's like this, sir, you know. He said, war lasses count. So, I did a big dig with a stick, you know. I said, the company commander doesn't understand you. He said, well, you know, looked at me, what lasses count? I said, chapter so, listen. You have always had a cravat with a gold tailing. He said, what is this count? I spoke, you're the type of man. I said, what he's trying to tell you, sir, his wife's had a baby, and he wants to know, can he go home? He said, no, he can't. So out he went. He called me in. said, what language is that? I said, broad Jordan. But that was exactly what he said, more or less, as